Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Cindy Shupak has won 3 Golden Globes and an Emmy for her work as a writer and executive producer of HBO's Sex and the City. Her writing credits also include Modern Family, Everybody Loves Raymond, and Coach. She's the best-selling author of the Between Boyfriends book. Her new book is The Longest Date. It's a collection of true stories chronicling the comedic and cringeworthy ups and downs of marriage. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Cindy Shupak to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I guess it was inevitable after the Between Boyfriends book that once you, quote unquote, settled down, got married, that you would write again.
Well, I wasn't sure it was inevitable. I was worried that was the end of my writing career because I had made such a career of writing about being single, and it was all I thought about and talked about for such a long time, Sex and the City and my book and columns for Glamour magazine. And this new book, The Longest Date, Life as a Wife, it's not just a collection of stories, it's our story, really, my husband and I kind of challenged myself to try to write about marriage in the same way I've always written about dating and relationships, to see if I could be just as honest and humorous, but also, enough of a truth teller, which I feel like doesn't happen as often about marriage.
Why do you think that is?
I think probably other writers and women are more discreet than me and probably respect the privacy of their spouse more and feel more loyal. But on top of that, I think just people in general and women especially, there's a little bit of a you made your bed, now lie in it feeling to when you get married. And, I think for your single friends, the people who are still single, and I was that girl for a long time who was still single when all my friends were married, there's a little bit of a, I can't complain too much about this because at least I finally found the guy. And then with your married friends, I think there's a fear that these things you're talking about aren't just funny, they might be serious, and then, what if this is a problem that other people are going to judge you for and think your marriage isn't as good? So there's a lot of insecurity and just we haven't developed a dialogue for it. That's really what I wanted to try to do.
Your husband, Ian, is actually your second husband. Your first marriage ended, and you found out your husband was gay. So how much does that inform the process of finding a second husband? In other words, does it, I assume...
The fact that he realized he was gay or just being divorced?
Well, both. I mean, it has to play a role in the process of dating again and finding another husband.
Yeah. I think anyone who realizes they didn't really know what they were getting into in a first marriage, or they made maybe a bad decision. I mean, I think I do believe in retrospect it was, I wouldn't change things, even though it was very difficult. And, but I feel like that became my story. It's the reason I was single for so long afterward. I thought I was just done. He was a great guy. I mean, he is a great guy. He just didn't really know. He hadn't sorted that out before we got married. And, it was definitely not something I enjoyed going through. But it made me stronger. It made me really try to figure out who I was and what I wanted and needed. And I sort of enjoyed, after a while, my freedom of being single and all the stories I was gathering in my career. I had time to take off where it wouldn't have if I'd stayed married and had kids that young. And I think coming into my second marriage, I really knew who I was and what I needed, which wasn't much. I was very self-sufficient by that point, and so I was able to just choose someone I wanted to be with rather than someone I needed to be with.
Upon first glance, Ian, your husband, I guess did not strike you as your type of guy.
Yes. Let's say he was straight, definitely, but he was such a, and he sort of still is, such a bad boy. I have a chapter about that in my book,
right,
about why, oh, how we love bad boys. And he...
In what sense? I mean, that's he's not knocking off liquor stores, right?
No, but he truly, he wasn't just a, you know, it wasn't just a joke. He, when I met him, he hated his corporate law job. He now does criminal defense work and prisoner rights and things that he, you know, loves and cares so much about, and it's changed him very much. But when I met him, he hated his job, so he was, like, drinking a lot. He was definitely a womanizer. He told me he'd be trouble. He rode a motorcycle. He had tattoos. He, you know, was with a woman the night I met him, and then she went home early, and he left with me. So I don't know if that makes her the stupid one or me, but but you know, he didn't exhibit all the traits you're looking for in a husband. He was definitely seemed like he would be fun to hang out with, but so I was sure he wasn't the one for me. I told all my friends at Sex and the City, I was working there at the time, like, do not let me fall for this one. And that's when they say they knew I would, because in the past I always said, this is the one, we're getting, yeah. He's the perfect guy, and then I would be disappointed, whereas Ian seemed like the completely wrong guy, and then I've been just happily surprised ever since.
Realizing that it certainly wasn't just you on that particular show, and there are other writers, and there's other input. But when something like that happened, does it have an impact on an arc? Does it show up within the confines of the show? Can you look back at the show now and say, oh, well, that's when I was going through this?
Well, what was funny is Michael Patrick King said, we already wrote a guy on a motorcycle. You know, like, we had written Berger, who had a motorcycle and was kind of afraid to write
right.
it. And so it was like, so that doesn't help us. but there were definitely things. I mean, toward the end of the season, I think I was grappling with the end of the show. Carrie was sort of like, is it time to stop questioning everything and just live? And do I want my friends to dissect this, or do I just want to be in it? And it had small impacts. There's a really funny thing that happened that Ian loves cheese, like talked a lot about cheese and raw milk, white cheddar, and all this cheese. And I started taking notes. I said, I'm going to write a character that loves cheese. And he was thinking, who will play the cheese guy? Robert Downey Jr.? Like, who will he date in the show? And it'll be like this sexy cheese guy. And it turned out to be Wallace Shawn on The Bad Blind Date with Candace Bergen.
Right.
He wouldn't stop talking about cheese.
Yeah, the best raw milk white cheddar I ever had was from a farm in, guess where?
Oh,
New York! We now rival England for the best cheddar in the world.
An hour later, I had somehow ended up on Enid's date.
Well, actually, raw milk couldn't even be used in the States till recently because it isn't pasteurized. I mean, it basically goes from the cow right to you.
And was like, that's what you did with that? So it doesn't always impact the show the way the men are hoping, but
you write in the book, and it's very funny. But you know, he comes in, and you know, I guess this is a sort of a universal thing when two people come together in a relationship, that they bring with them, of course, themselves, their personalities, and their stuff. A lot of stuff in Ian's case, and including a big old slobbery blockheaded Saint Bernard.
Yeah, in fact, in the Ladies' Own Journal that just hit stands, there's an article and some pictures if you're curious about the St. Bernard. Yes, he didn't bring the St. Bernard. That's the really ironic thing. It was one of the first negotiations that we really struggled through. And I talk a lot about those negotiations
yeah.
that you end up with. And it was one I lost because he wanted a dog, and somehow he convinced me a big dog was less work than a small dog because they were less needy. And then I got really bamboozled because he took me to this giant dog rescue place where there were, like, Great Pyrenees and Great Danes, so somehow the St. Bernard looked sort of reasonable there until we got her home. And I really, even though I can laugh about it now, thought it was a huge mistake. The dog was so nervous when we got her home. She was shedding and panting and drooling and all these things that she doesn't really do normally, but she was so nervous, and she could tell I was nervous and didn't want her there, and then it felt too late because she was there. So it was quite a journey. And now, of course, I'm so glad I lost that negotiation because I love Tink. And she, you know, at the time also, we weren't sure we should get a dog because we were trying to have a baby. And I thought we should have the baby first and then get a dog. And then it took us such a long time to have a baby because we encountered all sorts of obstacles. So I'm so glad we had Tink that whole time. Comfort.
As you refer to the dog in the book, like a person in a dog suit. Which is
yeah,
a great way.
We have a balcony, and she'll put her paws up on the balcony when Ian leaves for work, and she really does look like a person in a dog suit. It's on her hind legs standing up.
You know, it seems, even in talking to you, and you certainly get this idea in the book, that time heals, not wounds exactly, but the things that you found annoying then are endearing now. And I guess we can relate to that in a relationship, in marriage, that these are the things that help bring us together and the obstacles that we work through that make us stronger and make marriage an institution worth working for.
Yes, I think ultimately the book is definitely a celebration and a validation of marriage. I mean, I wanted to be more specific about what kind of work marriage was. And for me, the surprising thing was a lot of the work was work I kind of needed to still do on myself to get over these obstacles I had to letting someone into my space and his stuff into my space and then a dog into my space and even really making room in my life for a child, even though I wanted a child. And the relationship, so, and neighbors and everything that just comes with suddenly joining a bigger community than you are in when you're single and you can sort of pick and choose and control your life more. So, I was so happy to hear from a friend who's engaged who read the book and said it was exactly what she needed to read. She had some kind of secret fears of what she was getting into and the next step of trying to have a baby, and it just made her feel very positive. So that made me very happy to hear.
When it is, of course, been mentioned that this book has been optioned for TV series with Fox, so you can't get away, I think, from writing about you and your life.
Uh-huh.
Which I assume is something that Ian eventually gets used to.
Yes. Were you saying I can get away from it with a series because we can fictionalize a bit? Or
well, yeah.
Saying I can't get away from it?
Well, you can get away from it in the sense of that people like hearing about you and what's uh-huh. going on because you are, the book is brilliant and very, very funny, and you're a wonderful storyteller. But through, I assume, will this book be somewhat fictionalized with another character name, or will it be you?
Yeah, that's the thing. The book is, I felt like I could control the tone of a book. There's many less chefs in a book. And so I really wanted to write the story my way and my words and try to make it clear when I know what I'm saying is slightly offensive or unlikable or when I'm, you know, it's just easier to control the tone for me in this sort of nonfiction. So this is the real deal, the raw material. And then the show will have very much my perspective and tone and many of the greatest stories from the book, but will also have the ability to use stories from other writers on staff or other friends who are married and add the perspective of other people. And I did feel like I wanted to change the names of the characters just so... even early on, the network had a few notes and said, even though I did change the name of me to, I guess, my character to Roxanne, they were saying, when you do this, and we really love when you do this, and when you say this, and I said, you've got to start calling her Roxanne. It feels so strange to me to have you giving me notes about what I did. So there was definitely a comfort in starting to fictionalize. And I will say, sometimes you can be more honest behind that veil of fiction. There were some things in Sex and the City I would be reluctant to admit did happen, and it was nice to say, oh, we had a whole staff writing, and, you know, you can't really pin that on any one of us.
You can't make this stuff up, right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, the book is The Longest Date, Life as a Wife. It is published by Viking. Cindy Shupak, a delight to speak with you. Again, the book is hilarious and just a lot of fun. I wish you all the luck in the world with the book and with the series and the projects. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a good day.
Thank you so much. Again, the title of the book is The Longest Date, Life as a Wife. It is published by Viking. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.